Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below.
Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, and today I'm joined by a man who has traveled the world through 86 countries, sold everything from batteries to eight-figure ERP deals, built a call center in Italy, and we're going to talk about how do you sell in a new country. Billy Keels, welcome to the show.
Hey, Colin, I am really looking forward to today's conversation. I'm sure it's going to be awesome, and I'm looking forward to adding value to your audience.
Man, I'm super excited. You're a really interesting role. You've got, not only are you a key account manager at SAP, but you also have your own side business and podcast, which we're going to talk about at the end here. Talk to me about Keep On Cash Flow.
Yeah, Keep On Cash Flow really comes from a place of I was looking to solve a personal issue that I had, which was around gaining more control over my financial life. And I felt like I'd done all the right things. I got the college degrees. I was rising up the corporate ladder, and I was placing my capital in a place that wasn't giving me the returns that I had expected. And I was really out of control. And so that led me to find a particular asset class where I felt like I had a lot more control and was able to get closer to my own dreams and goals. When I started talking to other friends about it, they were really interested. And so it was kind of just trying to solve my own individual problem. I've created a business that's helping other people to solve theirs as well.
Very cool. And you're actually talking about that journey on your podcast, which we're going to get to at the end of the episode. Today, I just want to focus this on, like, how do I sell in a new country? Yeah. We're going to talk about some lessons learned. You've been to a lot of countries. You've sold in a phenomenal amount of countries. And we're going to talk about, you know, if you're listening, there's a couple of things, probably one thing in particular that's going to really help sort of localize yourself. Before we get into that, why should anybody, if they're listening, why should they consider like moving to a different country to sell? And if you're listening to the podcast, have you ever considered moving to a different country or going to sell in a different geo? And so Billy, why should somebody, if they haven't considered it, why should they listen?
You know, what I've seen is there are a number of kind of two different tracks. It could be really for a personal growth opportunity or a professional growth opportunity. And being able to live overseas in a culture that's not your own, potentially speaking in a language that's not your own, and really having to understand new cultural norms, it really provides on a personal level. It's really about how you survive, how you adapt, and being able to go through that progress or that progression, better stated, and being able to do it in a way where you kind of have to do it on your own because all of the norms are different, the language is potentially different, and it's about seeing what you can do. That's on the personal side. On the professional side, it really, what I've seen is that it provides a massive opportunity for anyone who feels like they are stuck in the particular role, in the particular opportunity, because as soon as you have an international experience, there are so few people that take that challenge on that when you take that on, it really puts you in a class that's different from everybody else. And so it really will open up the doors because people are typically going to look at you and want to understand, well, what the same question you're asking me right now, Colin, why would you actually do that? And what did you learn? And how can you bring back what you learned? And how can we best practice share, right? And not doing it on a PowerPoint slide or talking to people that are in different countries, but actually you're someone who spent the last X amount of time living in that country and understanding it. So I really see why you would do it. And I'm sure that there are more reasons why someone would do it. But those are two of the things that I've actually witnessed people doing after having worked for over 23 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. And these are also some of the different advantages and benefits that I have been fortunate enough to receive both on a personal and a professional level.
It seems like even with certain, say, large software companies, that international experience is a requirement. And if you are in a position and you want to take that next step, that you have to do a tour of duty outside of the country.
Right. One of the things that is happening because of the globalization, because the world is becoming, we're becoming more and more people, the world is becoming smaller. And so when you have that opportunity to grow, Yeah, I mean, there are very few global executives that have not had an opportunity to live and manage a business outside of their home country, their home territory. And yeah, I mean, you're right. It becomes almost a point if you want to continue to climb the ladder and you want to continue to have more of an influence over the organization and ultimately be able to lead that organization, having international experience is one of the things that, yeah, if you don't have it, it's probably going to weaken your chances of getting that next promotion.
Totally. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention your location. I'm in Vancouver, and a lot of people, when I say I'm from Vancouver, they're like, oh man, that's so amazing. Like, it's, you know, I get a real positive reaction when I share that I'm from Vancouver. You're in somewhere even, in my opinion, even better than Vancouver. You're in Barcelona. I'm so pumped. So talk to me about how you landed there and what do you like about the international experience?
Yeah, sure. And so it's one of those things when you're talking about, like, Vancouver is a really, really awesome place. And so as soon as people say Barcelona, it just puts a smile on my face, right? So when you're watching us here on the video, then great. And if you're not watching us on the video, you should be watching on the video because we both are smiling happy about this. What I would say is, you know, being here in Barcelona, I've been here now for about 15 years. I never planned on being, actually Barcelona wasn't even on my radar, to be completely transparent. Back in 2001, I was planning on doing a one-year sabbatical. I'd worked and traveled throughout some 58 countries at that point in time, and I just didn't see myself going to a normal 9-to-5, quote-unquote normal 9-to-5 job. I got accepted at a university in Paris called the Sorbonne, where I wanted to learn how to learn more about the French language and culture. I wanted to learn how to salsa dance. Yes, I did say salsa dance, and I wanted to learn more about wine, and that was supposed to be done in a year.
In France, and you learned to salsa dance in France.
Yeah. Okay. It's a long story, man.
Okay. Just clarifying.
See, it's the whole thing of, I always want to have goals, and that those were my three goals, right? I wanted to learn language, dance salsa, and have wine. The wine actually helped the salsa, to be honest. But
I can see that.
Yeah, and so anyway, so I had that opportunity, and once I started learning about the culture, and that took about 6 months, right? And I didn't know anybody else. I really wanted to stay. And so I was fortunate, and a couple of the different companies that I worked with before, I was able to leverage some of those relationships, and then ultimately had to go through different selection processes and eventually was hired, but in the south of France. And so I was in a town called Montpellier, and then I left there, and you talked about it before, to start up an Italian sales team. And then I got to Barcelona. So the reason for me kind of telling you that is Barcelona wasn't originally on my plan, but I met a really nice, cute Spanish woman while I was living in France. And hey, listen, I'm here in Barcelona because I fell in love, and we got married, we have two kids, and yes, so that's why I'm in Barcelona. And plus, it's a pretty awesome city.
It seems like one of the additional benefits that it opens your eyes, it gets you out of your box, this international travel. Like, you might think, hey, what I have right now is amazing. But you have, if you haven't been and traveled and worked in other places, you're comparing to, okay, this town, or like living in the suburbs or living in the city.
Yes. And yeah. I mean, that's completely, if I can jump in here, that you are absolutely right. And the more that you travel, you know, there's a positive part about that because it does open your mind to so many different things, and you take in different perspectives. Many times it's one of those things where we start to learn how to use these two ears, and we use this mouth to ask the right questions so that we can actually get the answers given the context of the place that you're in. And what do I mean by that? I can ask the same question of different people, one in Barcelona, the other in Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from. And because of the context of those two places, the way that I ask the question could be the same question, is perceived in a different way. And so when you start to understand that, you don't necessarily jump to conclusions because not everybody thinks the way that you do in your hometown. And that's one of the other advantages of traveling and interacting with people from so many different places, that you start to understand that the world revolves around more than the town that you have lived in your whole life.
There's also a Barcelona in the United States. So we're talking about the one that's in Spain, right?
Love that. Yes, we are talking about Barcelona, Spain. Yeah.
As a Canadian, and I only ever have this conversation with Canadians, but people will say, I got an office in London, and I have to ask them, like, London or like the real London, like Canada's London.
So we have a London in Ohio too. Yeah, I got you.
So in the real Barcelona, and I guess just moving abroad in general to sell somewhere else, what was harder than you expected?
A lot of it was the, when I think about it now, and this is right, this is 2001. So this is 19 years later, having now sold outside of my home country in different environments. The biggest thing was I had a lot of misperceptions about the way that things would work anywhere outside of the United States, which is where I'm from. And so I guess one of the things that I think is really interesting, especially when we talk about the sales profession, right? Because there is a very clear process that you follow no matter where you live in the world. And so it's about more understanding that process than maybe, so I guess it's more getting out of your own way and trusting in that process so that you can ultimately deliver on whatever promise it is you're supposed to be delivering on. So I think that was I know that was the biggest thing, is really being able to get out of my own head to just really get involved in the local countries or countries that I was selling to or living in.
Yeah, I could see how that'd be, it'd be difficult to get out of your own head. I've traveled, I haven't lived in any countries in Europe, but I did live in Australia. And if you could pick a culture that would be so close to Canadian, it would, like, I think Australians would certainly be up there. And I found it difficult to sell and to the point where I wasn't even sure, like selling in Canada to Americans and Canadians, I find that the differences can be very, very striking, especially when so much of what we're trying to pick up on to understand where we're at in a deal can be very, very subtle differences. I couldn't even imagine. And I think I had this sort of like self-limiting belief that I couldn't sell if I was to move to a different culture. Like, I feel like I'm a competent salesperson in the North America market, but if I went to Australia or even Spain or Italy or France, that I don't think I'd be able to sell anything.
So let me help you get out of your own head. You are an excellent sales professional. You understand the process. So you're in the beginning, and I guess that's one of the reasons why I say you have to trust the process in the beginning. Because culturally, you're not going to understand things. Like, I didn't understand selling into the French culture. I didn't understand selling into the Italian culture. I didn't understand selling into the South African culture or the Spanish culture. But guess what? I understood the sales process. And so I really, really leaned on that. And what you want to do when you do that is lean on in your understanding of the process. And then you need to put steps in place so that you can start to understand the culture. Because when you can combine understanding and ability to execute against the process plus the cultural understanding, I mean, that's when you're playing on almost equal level. And there's also a certain point where you have to say to yourself, are you a native? If you're a native, then everyone's going to hold you to the native expectation, right? And I don't try to be Spanish because I'm not Spanish. I didn't try to be French because I'm not French. I didn't try to be Italian because I'm not Italian. But what I did do is demonstrate that I was really interested in understanding about the places that I was living in. And I had the opportunity and the types of roles that allowed me to do that. And so I was able to trust the process, which was the sales process, be able to then combine that with getting a cultural understanding. And then from that point, it allowed me to feel more comfortable, to feel more confident. And it didn't happen right away, Colin. Like, this is a process. It takes some time. It could be a month. It could be 2 months. It could be 2 years. But that's also why I believe that having the international experience and being able to do it for as long as you can is such an enriching opportunity for you on a personal level. And it opens up so many doors for you on a professional level.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. And I wonder if we could sort of zoom in, because like, I think there are differences here of like, if you are traveling abroad with, say, a family, like you are now, and if you're a single individual, as you were when you first made it to the continent, like, there's got to be some real stark differences between how you would assimilate, for lack of a better word, into the culture.
Yeah. Before I even say that, I just have to say this, right? Because it just makes me laugh. So the other day I was on my LinkedIn page, and I was kind of talking about the what's going on in the world right now. And so there's really two different realities, right? There are the realities of people that are going through this period in time, which is the COVID time. And they have no children or older children. And that, so these are the friends of mine that I'm talking to, and they're like, oh, I read 16 books and I did this and I did that and I was able to do so much exercise. And then there's people that are living through the exact same thing, but the context is different. And we have children. Some of them are two, some of them are six, some of them are eight. And our experience is completely different, right? At the exact same period of time. And so I see what, like, the, so when you ask that question, it made me, I'm just thinking, wow, it's very similar, right? And so one of the things that I believe is really, really amazing, when you can have this international experience when you're younger, meaning less experience from a professional standpoint, or you have no ties, is really to take advantage of it, because that's when it's much, much easier. And I'll use my own example. In the beginning, I came to Europe and I had, you know, I was very single. So I was able to spend as much time as I wanted to outside of the office in local cultural events, right? Whatever that was, whether it was going to a museum or dancing salsa at night until whatever hour of the morning or night or whatever. And that allowed me to also accelerate my understanding of the culture, because I was able to dedicate more time there because it was all my own. If you move 15 years later, now I have I'm married, I have two children, and where I want to spend my time and my energy is with my family. So regardless if I live in Prague, if I live in Vancouver, if I live in Barcelona, outside of the office, because many of you are probably traveling and doing things like that, or you're spending a lot of hours in the office. And when you get home, you want to be able to see your family, hug your kids, hug and kiss your wife or your husband. And so, yes, you have to put, you can still accomplish that, but you just have to be a lot more structured when you have, and you're traveling overseas with family. And it's also one of the things that I see sometimes when you have that international experience and it's later in life, you don't get as much of the outside of the office cultural understanding or integration, I would say. So I know it's a long-winded answer to your question, but that when you said that, it just, like, I'm thinking, man, this is just what I'm living right now. So hopefully that was clear, Colin.
Yeah, I follow you. I mean, it totally makes sense that as you have a larger center of gravity around the family, right? Yeah. That's going to pull you back home, and it's a trade-off of, like, you want to be a good father or you want to fully immerse yourself in the culture. And it's much easier to fully immerse yourself when you have less of a center of gravity at your home, when the center of gravity is literally just the bed that you sleep on and the basic amenities. And so let's assume that somebody is, you know, they've got some more freedom. Do they have to go to school and take a class and learn the salsa and drink wine, or, like, what were some of the things that helped you immerse yourself in the culture?
I think that sometimes we make it overcomplicated. What I recommend to people all the time, because I get many, many calls of people that, hey, listen, I'm thinking of going over here. I've done this. I want to do that. I want to do this, but I'm nervous about whatever. And I don't speak the language. I won't do this. I won't do that. And, you know, I was talking to a guy who's a fellow investor. He and his wife just moved to Japan, and he's trying to figure out what he should do to go out and meet other investors. And I said, well, I think you're probably looking at it from a different way, right? I always start out, what are your objectives, or what is it that you want to do, right? We talked about earlier, you're going to go to Paris. You're going to learn French. You're going to learn the language, the culture, you're going to salsa dance, and you're going to learn about wine. Those are the three goals that you have. Those are the three objectives. Do that. Whether you're in Paris, whether you're in Vancouver, whether you're in Barcelona. Because guess what? If you're doing things that you want to do anyway, the chances are pretty good that you're going to meet other people that like doing what you do. And so the fact that you have that in common later on is going to give you the opportunity to learn more about the people's culture that you're living in. And that's going to be based on a foundation of something that you already like, or something that you already have in common, or as a common goal or objective. So that's, I mean, I try to take the mystique out of this whole language thing, because I mean, it's just getting in our head once again. Like, yeah, you're going to struggle. It's not going to be easy the first couple of weeks, or maybe the first couple of months, because you don't speak the language. But guess what? You both love salsa dancing. And so guess what? You're going to salsa dance. You're going to laugh. You're going to look stupid, but eventually you're going to improve. And then you're going to be able to talk about, you know, the badba or whatever the case may be, the basic step. And so it's really easy as long as you're doing things that you already genuinely like to do. So what I usually tell people is go out and find what it is that you like to do. Some people may be playing soccer or football. You may like to play basketball. You may like to paint. Do that in the new culture. And then the other stuff will start to happen.
Right on.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I totally follow you. It's you're basically rejoining society just in a different city, and you're doing the things that you do. And if you can't do the things you do that you normally do, like when I went to Australia, there isn't a huge hockey community there. Surprise, surprise. So yeah. I learned how to play footy, and I would hang out at the club with the guys. And all of a sudden I had, 30 friends, and they all had 6 or 7 names and nicknames for each other. And yeah, soon enough I was like fully immersed in the slang, and that took me a while to like get out of the habit of using certain slang, because there's certain words that are popular down there that are not very popular up here. And so I'm curious, like we've talked a little bit about how to sort of immerse yourself in the culture. How do you even get yourself into a role that's going to let you go global?
Wow. So there's a number of different ways that you can do that, right? And I'll just share my story. I never understood, or I didn't even know that there was a world that existed, because in my first 5 years out of college, I was really working face to face, right? And so I found a world that was inside sales, what we call it at the time, and they call it virtual sales, they call it whatever you want to call it, right? And so I found that this was one of the ways, at least as an accelerator, because you're typically surrounded by lots of people, especially in the software world, where there's lots of movement, you have lots of different people typically that are coming from a global or regional level that are in, and you get an opportunity to interact with people that you normally don't, right? Because they're coming from Europe, Middle East, and Africa. They're coming from Asia because they want to see the operation that you have, or they have a global leaders meeting or a regional leaders meeting. And so guess what? You're in a place where you're selling typically, right? I was always involved in sales. There's services, there's a bunch of different stuff, but you're in this place where you have the perfect opportunity to create new relationships, understand and meet new people. And for instance, with me, I was meeting new people all the time. And when I was in Montpellier, I was in a place for Southern Europe, Southern Europe, which was Italy, France, and Spain. And I was selling on a French sales team. It was really tough because I didn't speak the language in the beginning. It was kind of rough. I'd only been there for 9.5 months. But you started meeting people that were from Italy and from the Spanish team and from the Portuguese team and other teams. And then creating relationships, showing what it is that you can do back to the role that you're performing or overperforming in, building those relationships from people that were constantly in and out and moving. And then guess what? That opened up a door to move to Italy, for instance, right? And so the same thing, maybe if you're in Vancouver and lots of people are traveling there, or you may be in Phoenix in the United States, or you may be in Miami, it's pretty much the same in that type of environment. But anywhere you, and I use an inside sales or a commercial sales as an example, but it can be the same thing if you're in a major city for a field sales organization, because you have the opportunity to, first of all, demonstrate that you can perform, create new relationships, and then it puts you in a position, in a better position, in my opinion, to be aware of those international opportunities, to be able to talk more about it and using it from a point of credibility, because you're already overperforming in your current role, you're building relationships with new people. And so when the new international opportunity comes up, hey, listen, why not? You've done the work, and as long as you're performing, overperforming, then I think it puts you in a really, really advantageous position.
You know, you're kind of echoing the sentiment of, we had Jamie Smithers, he's the CRO at Thought Exchange, and he spent some time at SAP.
I know Jamie.
You know Jamie?
Yeah, I know Jamie. Yeah. Big shout out to Jamie.
Right on. He was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, the COVID era, all time is blended together.
It could have been yesterday. You're not alone.
And we were talking about not necessarily going global, but how to get the promotion and sort of going from an individual contributor to somebody who is in more of a leadership position. And mm-hmm. his advice was very similar to yours, which was do your fucking job, be yep. really excellent at your job, and like do that first, and then yep. work on all the extras.
Yeah, I mean, it does you no good to build this great relationship with people and blah, 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 because the more senior executives that you interact with, like they know pretty quickly, are you just somebody who's out to schmooze everybody and do this or do that? Are you somebody who's actually performing, because if people, nobody's going to waste time with someone who's not performing. I mean, just being really honest. So you have to excel or, you know, overachieve in your current role and be able to build relationships so that when the top opportunity arises, that you're better placed than anybody else to go after that next promotion.
Do you find that there's more or less competition for those international roles?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. So I believe that there, and this is based on not statistics or anything like that, but I think numbers wise, there's less competition. However, the people that you're competing against are the cream of the crop. So if you're not on your A+ game, you might, I mean, don't waste your time, because there's so much that goes into that for a large corporation. Like, it's not, no big corporation just going to send you away so that you can be on a, you know, you're out on a
Kentucky tour or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's just not going to happen. Like, companies want return on their currency and on your time. So you have to make sure that, yeah, you're in a position where you're going to be able to do that and know that, yeah, there's not going to be maybe 50 people that are going to go for that role, but the 10 people that are going to go for that role are really, really, really top performers. Mm-hmm. So you got to be on your A+ game or you're just going to waste your time. So I think it's more about who are the people that are going to be competing for those roles versus the number of people that are going to be competing for those roles. Because you're going into a different league. You're stepping into a different league.
And I imagine at the same time, like I know working in large companies can be fairly political. I don't imagine any sort of manager wants to put up one of their people that hasn't been performing and send them to a different team, because that's going to reflect poorly on them.
Correct. Which is why I believe in that philosophy, right? You're going to promote the A players, or you should be looking to promote the A plus players, right? Because those people that you promote, that's a reflection of you as the leader that comes from your team. You know, I remember from my team, I've had people that went to Australia. I had people that went to Singapore, and it was really awesome. Especially when you start seeing that those people went into a sales executive role. They soon became managers. And now we stay in touch with people today that are directors and VPs. And so that, you know, that's a reflection of you as a leader. You can't take the credit, but they, you know, it would have been very unlikely that some of the people that were on my team, I would have recommended to be promoted because they weren't even doing their day job.
So I'm curious, I'd love to follow up on, like, what are some other questions that people that call you up that ask you about sort of the going global move? What are the questions do you hear from people?
And so a lot of times people, especially because I deal with a lot of salespeople, of course, right? And so I want to understand, you know, what's the cost of living? How much money should I be asking for? And actually on that point, so I get that question a lot. Like, how much money should I be asking for? Mm-hmm. And that's a question that frustrates me, right? And I'm in the sales profession. And so I believe that excellent sales professionals should be compensated excellently. If you're looking for an international experience, you should be doing it. There are some places you can go where, you know, from a tax perspective, it can be advantageous depending on where you're from and blah, blah, blah. But money should not be the motivator for you to move overseas, because there's so many things that come with moving overseas that if you're focused on just making money, you're wasting your time. Like, in my opinion, you're wasting your time. So, I didn't mean to digress too much, but so those are some of the questions that come up. Other questions are very much related to, you know, how do I get around and where should I be living? And should I just stay really close to the office, or should I stay somewhere else where I can be more integrated into the local culture? And a lot of that typically, Colin, will come back to, is that person moving over with family? Is that person moving over by themselves? Is this someone who is just getting started in life? I mean, there are a lot of different aspects that go around that. Sometimes people ask me, you know, should they go for this type of role moving over versus another role? But most of the questions, I would say, are more of a personal nature versus a professional nature.
Gotcha. So what is my life going to look like in this other city? And it sounds like the answer is kind of disappointing. It sounds like it's going to be pretty much the same, but possibly a different language and then maybe a different sport or a different dance.
Well, it's not going to be the same. So what you should be doing, in my opinion, to be integrated, right? Because this is about the integration part and being able to understand and get the most out of the cultural aspect of it. Definitely hold on to things that you love. And I used football earlier because they're, or soccer. And so I've been in Europe for a while, man. So, you know, people will come and be connected to things that they like, at least to get started. But then you may move to another place. Like, I'm from Columbus, Ohio, man. I never thought that I was going to enjoy going out to have a beer or a wine with someone sitting out on the terrace. Like, we just didn't do that in Columbus, Ohio. But guess what? I enjoy doing that here in Barcelona, Spain. Right? I just do, because it's not something I would have done before. I love just being able to go out and walk along the sea. I didn't do that in Columbus, Ohio. Strange, go figure. But those are things that I really enjoy doing. So I would say that your life is not necessarily going to be the same. I would say hold on to those things that you really feel comfortable with to get started. Because then you're not kind of doing 5 million things at one time. Because it's almost like, you know, when you're going through a sales cycle, if you're trying to practice a new skill and you're doing all different things at the same time, like, you don't really know where you can't diagnose where the issue is. And it's the same thing as it relates to living overseas. Go to a place where you know that you can do that one thing, do it well, meet people. And then from there, you're going to meet so many different people that are going to be doing a lot of different things. And your life could potentially look very, very different. But the starting point was at least around something that you felt comfortable with.
Totally fair. I 100% agree with you there. One thing that surprised me when I moved to a different country, or even just visiting different countries, is how after you're there for a week, it just feels normal. Right? Like, on the surface, if you're listening and you're sitting there in Columbus, Ohio, and you're saying, man, that like moving to Barcelona sounds scary, sounds like a big change. I think the thing that surprised me the most is that how normal it felt after a very short period of time.
I completely agree with you, because you start to adapt to the place where you're living. Or at least if you're going to stay there for a while. I mean, because you could also get there and you want every single thing to be like it was back at home. Like, if I came to Barcelona, Spain, and every single Saturday I wanted to watch or go to Ohio Stadium to watch Ohio State Buckeyes, well, I would probably be pretty miserable. So I need to realize that I'm not going to be able to go to watch games every week. And so that's just a part of things that I have to give up. Like, I haven't seen the Super Bowl in ages, but guess what? I can now watch it on the day after and stay away from TV and all that other kind of stuff. So yeah, there's certain things that you have to inherently know that you're not going to be able to continue to do when you make the choice. And that's the beautiful part of it, is you're making the choice to have a new opportunity where you can grow personally and you can grow professionally.
Amazing. Yeah. One thing, and I feel like we could just have this conversation. We did a pre-interview and it went way over time. And so I want to be cognizant of the fact that I won't keep you here all day, because it is borderline evening in Barcelona.
It's all good.
I do want to, like, you had the opportunity at a fairly young age to open a call center in Italy. I'd love if you could talk to me about that experience. What was that like? Whereabouts in Italy was it? So we can all fantasize about the opportunity.
Cool. So since I've been here, I've been pretty much a Mediterranean kind of kid. So I was from Paris, and then I went down to Montpellier, which is on the coast. And then I was living in Sardinia in a town called Cagliari. And so it was really cool. And that was an amazing growth opportunity, because, and talked about before, I was overachieving in the roles that I was doing. I had an opportunity to meet a couple of guys, a guy named Mauro and another guy named Walt. And these two guys were really amazing because they believed in me, because they watched how I was performing before I believed in myself. So big shouts out to Walt and Mauro as well. Because now that I look back on it, like, they took a chance, right? They sent me to start up, and I went with a colleague. There's myself and one other colleague, and Laura, she was there, and she was really, really awesome. And being able, like, she was the rock, right? I was able to be there and follow her. But while we were there, like, I didn't even speak Italian, right? When we got there, it was a completely different thing. And so basically being able to be there, be surrounded by locals, it was one of those things that I tried to take up as much of the culture as possible and take all of the things that I felt safe and secure in, which was the business that I was asked to run. And because I felt secure in that, I was running that business and learning as much as possible with the teams. And, you know, at the time we were working like crazy. So it was one completely different thing. And then on the weekends we would just kind of hang out and had a chance to learn a lot more culturally as well.
Beautiful. I didn't realize it was in Sardinia. That's even more like, I don't imagine it's a big Western tourist spot, I think. So what was the English level like there?
It was pretty low. I mean, it was really low. So it was great for me because I had a chance to really perfect in like 6.5 months my Italian. So, yeah. I mean, that was the part why I said, you know, Walt in Mauro, they really took a chance because they saw that I spoke some other languages and they took the chance to say, hey, look, we think this guy can learn pretty quickly. And they were right. So.
And how big did that call center grow to?
So when we started, you're making me go back now. So I think we started and there were, I think, 8 of us. And I think they got up to a couple hundred.
Dang.
A couple hundred people. Yeah.
So one thing I'm trying to imagine is you're on this island in the off the coast of Italy. You're a non-native speaker. You've got these 8 salespeople in a room and you're doing call coaching. Like, talk to me about that experience.
Yeah. So I guess this is a part where I start thinking about the guys I was talking about before. So like Walt and Mauro, and they saw something that I guess I didn't even really see. And so I was able to learn the language, but I guess even before I got there, as I was performing in my role on the French speaking team, then I was moved over to a Spanish speaking team. And then I was promoted to manage a team that was for France, Italy, and Spain. So even before I left Italy, I demonstrated that I could perform in both of the roles, and they put me in a leadership role where then I started, we were performing as a team. I was leading that team. And so then that's what brought up the opportunity to move into Italy. And so I started taking some classes before I left to go to Italy about a month before. So I started building a foundation. And because coaching is so fundamental in those environments, there were kind of 2 things that were happening. Number one, there were the call recordings where we could do side by side. So I was able to use a recording to then coach later. So I got to listen to it once and listen to it again with the inside sales rep at the time. And so I was once again going through reps and I was getting a chance to learn more. And I was also fortunate, some of the team, when we started, remember, we were really, really small. There were like 8 of us. And so they either spoke some French and some of them spoke or understood Spanish, but there was very little English. So I was forced to really pick my game up to improve my Italian as much as possible and as quickly as possible. So I used technology where I could. And at the same time, I was fortunate because people spoke other languages, but it was definitely not like doing it in natural language. And at the same time, we were still able to get results. We were able to help the team understand what the processes were. The team was helping me understand more about some of the expressions and languages and vocabulary in Italian. So, you know, it all worked out and it worked out really well to the point that, you know, the business was booming when I left and I was able to speak Italian. I still speak to this day. I was just speaking to somebody the other day, one of the CFOs, about some business opportunities. So it was actually... It's something that still has served me well to this day, and was very, very fortunate to be able to get back to the team at the time.
This is the authentic part of the podcast where you might be able to hear some screaming children on the other side of the door here.
It's all good.
And the mic is pointing their direction too. Just, what do you do, right?
Love it, man. It's the new reality. It's the new reality.
For sure. For sure. So I want to get to the cold call portion because I want to hear about this, the podcast that you have, but any advice, if somebody's listening and they thought, hey, this is amazing. I'm really thinking about going global or taking a role outside of my hometown or outside of where I am now. And any final thoughts, any last advice for them?
Yeah. I mean, I would always say find someone that you, number one, if you have it in your heart, you deserve it to yourself to try. Because the worst thing that could ever happen to you is that you look back on your life and you say, you know what, I should have, or I would have. Like that just would not be any fun at all. So if it's in your heart for personal reasons or for professional reasons, what do you have to lose? Right? Take the shot. Go for it. The worst thing that happened is they're going to say no for that particular opportunity. And then you try for another one. And I can assure you that if you try enough, that there is the opportunity that is there. It may not be the opportunity that you idealized, but if it gets you to your goal and you can start, then take the opportunity and amazing things can happen from there. I am proof of that. I would also say if anybody, you know, if anybody ever wants to chat about it, if you don't have that person, well, start to build your network of people at your company and find that person. People can always connect with me as well. I know we'll talk about that later, but I talk about it all the time for people that have this desire because I know what it's like. I mean, I do know what it's like to be in a place, you're in a comfort zone and you're asking yourself, should I do it? I've spoken to people that have literally, it's their first job and they're trying to figure out whether they want to do it. I've spoken to people that were in college and wanted to figure out how they can start overseas. And I've spoken to couples that have been married and their kids are out of the house and now they want to try and figure out how they can live in Europe. And so I love being able to talk about that. So I'd love to chat with anybody who has that has that on their heart or in their head.
Right on. And I'll throw a link to your LinkedIn profile here so people can find you there. Cool. Let's talk about this podcast and do it in the most sales podcast way possible. I'm going to make it cold call me. And so who is the average listener or what is the sort of typical listener for your podcast?
Wow. So we will, we are really working to help six-figure sales executives who really want to have much more control over their financial lives and being able to do that in a way that, you know, most people don't think about. And that is being able to look at other types of asset classes, not just the traditional paper assets, because there are many different asset types, specifically tangible real assets that people, if they understand, if they take the time to get educated, can really gain much more control over their financial lives. And we're not trying to tell people to go out and, you know, you're going to become a multimillionaire. No, but I'm surrounded by enough and salespeople primarily who I deal with are sales leaders, corporate execs. But most people that work in really big multinational type of companies, I have a feeling they're going to enjoy the type of guests that we have on in the information that we're sharing.
Cool. All right. So let's get to the cold call. I'm going to do ring, ring, and you're going to try and convince me to download or to subscribe to the podcast and give it 5 stars.
Cool.
All right. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Colin, good morning. Listen, I know that one of the things I've heard is that about 67% of most sales executives today feel like they're still struggling to make ends meet by the end of the month. And your boss mentioned that I should reach out to you because you might be the person or you're the best person in the organization to help me speak to your sales organization. I was wondering if your boss was correct.
Yeah, that'd be me.
Okay, fantastic. What I was wondering right now, because we've been working with a lot of different sales organizations, helping their salespeople to find out how they can gain better control over their lives, people that work at companies like XYZ, ABC. And I was really interested in getting 20 minutes in your calendar. I just wanted to know, what is the best way to get 20 minutes in your calendar so we can go a little bit more in detail about this?
What specifically do you help people with?
Well, we help people to primarily get more control of their financial lives, which basically means looking at alternative assets that are beyond what we would call traditional paper assets.
Gotcha. Let's sounds interesting. So we'll get you into the team and you got a presentation or something you're going to share, or are you going to listen to the podcast?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things that we would like to do to prep us for the meeting, there's actually a podcast. The podcast is by a guy named Billy Keels. It's the Going Long podcast, which will start to give you some of the insights that we're going to go much deeper into during our 20-minute meeting when we meet next Thursday at 4 p.m.
Right on.
That work for you?
It sounds great.
All right. Fantastic.
Right on. Thanks so much for coming on the show. It looks like you got some really interesting guests on your podcast. So I'm going to throw a link in the show notes if people want to check that out. So you get your LinkedIn, you get a link to the podcast. Yep. Just really quickly, what was the most interesting guest you've had on so far? Or maybe, yeah, your favorite so far.
Wow. We've interviewed over 31 people already. And wow, there's so many different people. I mean, we've interviewed people that have just made their first, they have done what's called a syndication. So being able to aggregate money to go out and buy a larger multifamily property, to people who have more than $500 million dollars worth of assets under management. And so I know we need to be able to make decisions, but, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. There's a guy who's personally made a really positive impact on me. His name is Victor Minash. He's actually out of Ottawa, and Victor is someone who is very, influential. He's someone who also comes from a tech background, and he's somebody who I have a very high esteem for. And he's someone who really goes out and is helping educate people around real assets, and we have a similar background. So people like Victor.
It's sort of like picking your favorite child. It's like, which is your favorite podcast episode and your favorite guest? You don't want to like call anybody out as not being your favorite. But I appreciate the struggle of trying to figure out your favorite episode.
Yeah. Victor. Well, it's just a lot of it is because Victor, he's made a very positive impact on me just as a person. He finds time to be able to give me coaching and mentoring advice, and he's helped me work through a number of things. And the fact that I had an opportunity to interview him and have him share his wisdom with my tribe was just, that was pretty awesome.
That sounds really special.
Yeah.
Billy, thanks so much for sharing your wisdom with our tribe and being on the show this week.
Colin, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to try and add a little bit of value to your tribe, man. Thank you.
Right on. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you all next week.